In 2010, the World Health Organization and the United Nations Population Fund recommended that manufacturers minimize the presence of nitrosamines. They are a class of carcinogenic chemicals. Sadly, the manufacturers of feminine hygiene products and condoms must not have gotten that memo. In September 2014, the Reproductive Health Technologies Project released independent test results of latex condoms sold in the United States. Only two major brands were found free of detectable nitrosamines across their entire product line. Sustain Natural is one of those brands. Hi, everyone. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. For the next hour, we're going to be talking feminine hygiene products, closing the toxic loop. And by the end of this podcast, I'm hopeful that every listener will have a sense about why all the fuss about the chemicals in products, which, besides pads and tampons, women may only use for a few minutes a day, a few times a week. There should be a fuss. Or maybe you'll even shake your head and wonder, why not more of a fuss? Our guest for this next hour is Mika Hollander, co-founder and CEO of Sustain Natural. I have no doubt that Mika will educate us about why, in a modern world filled with toxins and pollutants, every exposure counts. And staying healthy means reducing or preventing every possible contact with every potential toxin surrounding us. And just a little bit more about Mika before the questions begin, and I've got lots of them. At 26, Hollander and her father co-founded Sustain Natural, a sexual wellness brand that makes condoms, lube, panty liners, and tampons. In March of 2018, she released her first book, Get on Top of Your Pleasure, Sexuality, and Wellness, A Vagina Revolution. Mika is deeply committed to changing the narrative around sexual wellness and breaking the stigma around women's sexuality, and we're going to give her plenty of time to do just that. I am really, really excited about this show. So Mika, not only thank you for being here, but thank you for doing what you're doing, starting a revolution and elevating the conversation about literally putting toxins in our bodies. Thanks for being
here. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And I do have to go on record as saying that Mika is sitting in her office in New York, and we always want to do a shout out for Gina, the Jersey girl that's always jealous that I can't go just walk down the street and get something. We've been doing quite a few interviews with people from New York City. The guy who has he's got a 1,300 square foot basement in Tribeca, and he's selling herbs to high-end restaurants, all done hydroponically. And I said, I can live in the basement in the place in Tribeca. So, anyway, let's go. So you are the daughter of Jeffrey Hollander, the founder and former CEO of Seventh Generation, a company whose mission is to nurture the health of the next seven generations and beyond, and who have helped to inspire a consumer revolution. So walk us through the process where you're getting from there to starting Sustain Natural. I'm sure that your early path led you to starting this important revolution. So how did it all start?
That's a good question. And I think, well, to some, it might seem really obvious that, you know, because of Seventh Generation, I grew up dreaming of starting a condom company with my dad.
It was not a natural segue for me. So
Nor for me. I grew up kind of in this strange but amazing world of natural products. 30 plus years ago, was sort of born into it, literally. Seventh Generation were exactly the same age. So I grew up with this sort of extra family member, which was the business, and spent my early years modeling cloth organic diapers, and then, you know, spent many times throughout the rest of time in and out of the business working on different projects. And it was really cool. And it's funny because I, during all of that and during that experience, especially just having a dad as an entrepreneur, I swore that it looked so terrible that it would absolutely never be anything I would ever consider. I was like, starting a business looks really bad. And it was, you know, it was an amazing company, and it was an awesome journey, and he loved so deeply what he did. And so that aspect of it was cool, but it looked just like way too much work. So fast forward about, you know, 25 years, I guess, in, or 20, a little over 20 years in, Jeffrey, my dad, left Seventh Generation full time, and he was sort of figuring out what he wanted to do next. And I was in business school at the time. And so in totally different places in our lives, in terms of our age and our career points, we were in the same place. We were both trying to figure out what we wanted to do. And at Seventh Generation, we actually launched organic cotton tampons and pads over 15 years ago. And I was really involved in that launch. And I really did care about those products and sort of the reproductive health industry at large. And so my dad actually came to me. It was a summer, over the summer, I was sitting by the pool, and he's put this document in front of me, and it was a pitch deck for fair trade condoms. And I was like, what is this?
The front of it said rainforest rubbers.
Yeah, and it was rainforest rubbers, which he had trademarked.
I love it.
He was like, this is it. This is what we're doing. Or this is what I'm doing. I don't know if you want to do this. And I was like, okay, I'll read through it. I'll give you my comments. So I read through it. I knew nothing about the rubber industry. I knew nothing about the condom industry. My dad's a quirky, brilliant person. And so it was interesting, definitely. But there was something about it that I didn't feel was a big enough opportunity. I knew the natural product space was growing, and I knew that there was a white space in the sexual wellness space within natural products. There weren't a lot of natural products in the space at the time. But this fair trade condom angle, rainforest rubbers, like at Whole Foods, I was like, I think we got to think a little bit bigger. It was funny. He was like, no, it'll be great. You know, we'll like go to music festivals and hand out product. He'd always wanted to go to Burning Man. And I was just like, let's keep thinking this through. So I did a lot more research around the condom industry. And I had spent time before business school at a brand strategy firm. And my role there was being trained to sort of look at categories, find the white space, and help brands within those categories sort of innovate and differentiate. And so when I looked at the condom category from that perspective, I read this statistic that 40% of condoms are actually purchased by women. And that really like stuck with me, because I started going into drugstores and looking at the shelf and being like, there's nothing vagina friendly about this aisle. This is like ego ribbed bells and whistles, all about, you know, how to stay harder. Like this, there's nothing about this that's talking to me,
right?
Personally, and talking to women in general. So I saw a real opportunity there. And I also then started doing a lot of research around the statistics around women's sexual health and looking at STDs and looking at unplanned pregnancy. And also I did a lot of qualitative research around how women feel, because obviously women are buying condoms, but how do they feel when they're making that purchase? And it was like 70% or a little bit more than 70% of women feel uncomfortable. They feel ashamed. You know, it's that classic, like checking out from the drugstore and shoving it in between the pages of People magazine. Like no one wants to be checking out with condoms. It's let alone tampons even.
I know. Unreal. I mean, women feel more comfortable about getting tampons, but even sending men to do it, I mean, my husband never cared, trust me, but there's still weird conversations about it. It's so hard for me to get my head around it, but it's right. So go ahead. Keep going. Oh my God.
Well, because there's this inherent shame associated with having your period, and associated with women who have casual sex or just enjoy sex.
Right.
And condoms are a symbol of that. So not a symbol of, wow, she's so awesome. She's taking control for sexual health. Go you, which is what we're trying to do.
Right.
And change that perception. But so there was this opportunity. There was a sexual health crisis among women going on when you looked at the statistics. And there was clearly an opportunity to create a brand within the condom space that appealed towards women. And obviously, in addition to all of that, as the initial purpose of Rainforest Rubbers, reinvent the entire supply chain and manufacturing process at right. the same time.
Correct.
So we took Jeffrey's initial idea and we put a little bit of this flavor and larger mission around women's sexual and reproductive health on it, and out of that came Sustain.
So perfect segue, and I love it when the guest helps set me up for my next question, but you didn't just start and build a company. You consciously chose to build a socially responsible business. And is that because of the influence of Seventh Generation, or because obviously the strength in your voice and the influence that you had on doing this is clear, it comes across loud and clear, but why was that so important to you?
Well, yes. I mean, Seventh Generation undoubtedly has been a massive influence in me personally, in how I think about business and how I think about building brands. And really, ultimately, for me, what is sort of the intersection of activism and capitalism. So Seventh Generation, you know, really to me created this mindset that, and I think it's actually become a reality at this point, you can't really build a consumer brand that doesn't focus on sustainability and natural ingredients or better ingredients and healthier ingredients. So to me, I feel like at this point, and even 5 years ago when we were starting Sustain, natural ingredients and healthy ingredients is almost like expected, right? Like no one's, imagine launching a new condom brand and people find out, or a lubricant brand and people find out that your ingredients like have negative consequences or are not
right.
clean. So Jeffrey spent a lot of time looking at the space from a sustainability standpoint, and I had no idea, and actually neither did he when we got into the space, that rubber and latex, which is the sap of the rubber tree, just like maple syrup is the sap of the maple tree, the rubber industry is quite a dark and sort of dirty place. There's
very
a ton
dark.
Of child labor,
right.
very dark. And it's similar to, you know, when you peel back the curtain with the electronics industry or the garment industry, it's usually bad news.
Totally.
It's not usually a lot of good news. So we spent months traveling around and looking for a rubber plantation, and we ended up finding this incredible place in southern India. It's the only fair trade certified rubber plantation in the world that makes latex for condoms. And it was just a night and day from everything else we had seen. And we felt really good about sourcing our latex from there. And we still source our latex from there. And then the second part of it was, you know, as you mentioned, so nitrosamines are something, it's a chemical that's present in most condoms sold in the U.S., and globally. And it's not an ingredient that gets added to condoms to the manufacturing process. But basically, whenever you heat and mold latex to make any latex product, a chemical reaction occurs and the nitrosamines form. And then what's kind of messed up, I won't curse on your show unless I'm allowed to.
There's only a couple of words you really can't say, but you can say some of it. I have cursed on my show.
When you heat and mold latex, this chemical reaction happens, the nitrosamines form, but then when the latex comes into contact with bodily fluid, the nitrosamines get released. So, holy crap, that sounds bad. Nitrosamines are a known carcinogen, and yet the condom industry is not actively putting nitrosamines into the product, but you have to add a chemical blocker to the manufacturing process to prevent the nitrosamines from forming. So that's what we, you know, we found an amazing ex-Durex R&D guy who had come up with this process, and we found another manufacturer in India near the plantation to sign up to basically make these nitrosamine-free condoms with us. And so when you think about it that way, it's, yes, it's seventh generation, definitely. But also just, I think, particularly millennials, but consumers in general, and even women more importantly, have become so aware of questioning what's in the products they're using that it just wasn't, of course, we would try and create, you know, the most sustainable condom in the world,
right?
Which is really what we did.
And I found myself a lot getting angry during prepping for this because of all the things that we didn't know. And there's so many more women who are getting all kinds of cancer earlier, harder, sooner. And I, of course, am now a conspiracy theorist to think it's all related to environmental factors like this. But let's move on to some critical details about the overall market. Yeah, I'm trying to save myself from a rant, but it'll seep out once in a while. What's in the products that are so incredibly dangerous and toxic? So generally, tampons, pads, condoms, lubricants, rubbers. Sustain doesn't have them. What is in most commercially available products now?
So, and there's a lot of information, and it's very different product to product. And I myself and Sustain are really not here to create fear around what's in traditional products. My goal is to just help support consumers to ask questions. I think consumers have a right
education.
To know.
Yep.
Yeah, they have a right to know what is going inside their vagina. Now, condoms and tampons, the FDA does not require condom or tampon brands to disclose their ingredients. So without even having the right to that information, which is the FDA saying you don't have the right to this information, we're not forcing disclosure, how are you even supposed to know what you're putting inside your body? And so in the absence of not having that information, from my perspective, you should only be using brands where you can access that information, which is brands like Sustain. So with tampons and pads, I mean, you can find a whole mix of different ingredients, cotton, rayon, fragrances, synthetic fragrances, There's a whole jumble of stuff. I think what's amazing with the tampon and pad market is you're seeing 100% organic cotton as that sector of the market booming. I think over 50% of millennials actually now believe that there's bad ingredients in traditional brands, which is amazing. I mean, this is a conversation that we started at Seventh Generation almost 15 years ago. And so now it's actually showing up in the market, and there's a real impact around perceptions around natural versus traditional brands. And with lubricants and some of the other products we have, like our wipes, I just, you know, anything that you're aware of and trying to avoid when it comes to skincare or shampoo or creams, like, you should absolutely avoid that stuff when it comes to anything going in on and around your vagina. Parabens, glycerin, petrochemicals. This stuff has, in my opinion, no place going inside one of the most absorbent parts of your body. I always like to tell people, like, I heard this thing a couple months ago. In Europe, they actually, you know, still if they need medicine to act really quickly, they'll administer it vaginally. Because anything that goes right into your vagina gets absorbed and goes straight into your bloodstream. It bypasses your liver. So when you think about that,
it's like, you know, everybody's press pause here and think about what you just said. Like, seriously, just press pause and let that be absorbed, so to speak, no pun intended, into your brain about what you just said. Yeah, it's a big deal.
And it's just, I think it's this amazing thing that we've experienced where it's like the minute you just tell people that and you talk to people that and you say, have you ever thought about what you're putting inside your vagina? It's sort of this like, holy crap again.
Deer in the headlights.
Yeah, because it's immediately, of course I should be mindful about that. And I think we all know what happens when like we have something going wrong with our vagina. It doesn't feel great. It impacts our overall health and wellness. It impacts how we're feeling mentally. And I really, really encourage people to demand the right to know, and support and use brands that are actively being transparent about their ingredients.
And just keep on the pressure. Consumers can rule. That's the message that I always want people to take away. Don't think you have no voice, because you can really vote with your purse. That's one way. But you can also work to get policies changed. I think a lot of this requires policy change, which is a longer journey. But it can start with just the awareness. So you mentioned there are really lots of unfriendly chemicals contained in condoms and a whole host of other vagina unfriendly products. Odor, fake fragrances. Like when I go into someone's home and they have like those things, those plug-ins that they put in the house to make their house smell like cinnamon or citrus, I'm like, just get some cinnamon sticks, because you, when you get desensitized, you feel it. So flavors, odor, masking agents, spermicides. What's in your products that make them so special? Tell us about sustained products, why they're so good for our bodies.
So I'll start with the condoms, which have been described by many of our customers as literally like world-changing products. We've had women who could not use condoms because they got so irritated by the fake fragrances, spermicide. It's just, we've reduced the protein levels in our products as well, which is what causes any sensitivity to latex. So the condoms are just natural latex. There's a bunch of different ingredients in there that you need to use in order to heat and mold and form the latex. But they're, as I said, 70% lower protein levels. There's no spermicide. It's fair trade. Vegan, so there's no casein, which is an animal byproduct that's found in some condoms. And it's really like our hero product, and we spent over a year and a half developing the product. So it's something that I'm really proud of. Our lubricant is the longest lasting organic water-based lubricant, which is amazing. We actually just upgraded our formula. So it's mostly water-based. There's some aloe, and it's 96% organic ingredients. It's free of parabens, glycerin, petrochemicals, and obviously any synthetic fragrances. And then our whole period line is 100% organic cotton. So just one ingredient, not too much to talk about there. But it's really important to use organic cotton versus even just regular cotton, because cotton's an extremely dirty crop.
Right.
And is usually treated with glyphosate, which is another known carcinogen.
That should be outlawed in the United States. We just have to get that in there too. It's a really bad chemical.
It's interesting what you said about, you know, there's the political aspect and there's the policy aspect and then there's the business aspect. And I think what we're seeing with the organic cotton period products is that that piece of the market is growing so exponentially. So many brands are entering the space. There's such an increased demand for these products. And traditionally, organic cotton has been more expensive. So the natural products in this category are more expensive, unlike our condoms, which were able to be price competitive with other brands. But as we increase the demand of organic cotton tampons and pads, the price of organic, the supply will go up and the price
right,
will come down.
Right. So there'll be an adjustment. Yeah.
Totally. So there is power in sort of voting with your dollars and making these choices. And sustains, you know, we sort of just say that we do everything in a vagina friendly way, and we only use ingredients that are going to sort of be beneficial to your body, which means pH balanced. I think what a lot of women don't know or realize, I didn't actually know a lot about pH before I started Sustain, is that we all have these individual pH levels in our vaginas. And if you introduce a product, they're all within usually a certain range. And if you introduce a product outside of that range, a lot of lubricants and wipes and washes are not biocompatible. They're not compatible with your vaginal pH. And when you introduce a product that's not compatible, it throws your system sort of in whack, and your body starts creating an overgrowth of bad bacteria. It's just because I sort of think of it as like your vagina gets sick, gets a little off balance. And as you develop this extra bad bacteria and the balance of good and bad bacteria gets thrown off, things can happen like bacterial vaginosis. So it's really, you know, I think the ingredient piece is really important, both just in terms of health, but also just in terms of making sure that you're maintaining a healthy pH level.
And I would venture to say that if I left now and went out and interviewed like the next 500 women I meet and asked them that question, nobody knows this stuff. That's what, like, it kills me. If there was something that caused men to get an infection, you know, it, I don't even want to go there. I mean, they'd be finding a cure for it because men do the most of the research. So, you know, to me, there should be a message that shouted from the rooftops and included as part of every sex education class and parenting class about what we're being exposed to and why it matters. I mean, I can tell you most mothers and fathers would care. It's not even a question that comes up. You know what I mean? My mother was great about educating us and said, you know, you should start off with using a pad. And then I remember her saying, when you're a little older, you can use a tampon. Never a thought about brand or ingredients. It just wasn't a thing. So switch to, you do a lot of targeting millennials. What is your thought from the global, you know, the view at 60,000 feet? Are millennials care more because they're more access to the information, social media? Are they a generation that cares and can give us hope? Why are the millennials grabbing onto this? And thank goodness that they are, because it skipped our generation. And my daughters have it. They're teaching me things. So why is it? Is there one factor, or is it a whole bunch of factors that came together at the right time?
I think it's a mix of things. I mean, I also think for millennials, you know, there's a lot of options. There's so many natural brands now. It's not even, I mean, when my parents were growing up, I mean, even when Seventh Generation was getting started, it was a very, very, very niche sort of crunchy granola thing. It wasn't mainstream. And now have all of the major retailers, Target, Walgreens, CVS, carrying a plethora of natural brands. So it's not unexpected that the millennial generation would sort of be receptive to these products and almost demand these products, because this is sort of what they grew up with and they do have a lot of options. And I also think access to information, obviously everything is digital, everything is out there. You can't, in my opinion, be successful as a business or a brand at this point and not be transparent or authentic.
Right.
People can see right through it. And so I think what's been so successful for Sustain is that from day one, we have taken an activist approach to our business. We've taken radical transparency and made it a core value. And we have been successful because of that. When you look at some of the brands that have entered the space, or some of the big brands that have been in the space forever, they don't embrace activism and radical transparency. And because of that, they're losing market share to businesses like Sustain.
Which is another perfect segue. It's kind of like we rehearsed this, but trust me, we didn't. there's a conversation. I was just involved in a conversation with one of our big clients a couple of days ago about brands getting involved in messaging. Big dogs like Nike and Gillette, they're changing the conversation for sure, whether you agree with it or not. What is your thought about brands helping to change the conversation in the right direction? In my opinion, like, who could be against full transparency? That's one thing. But they're more in the social justice arena. Can they really impact and help us move the needle forward? Or should they just focus on selling their products?
It's a complicated question and I think issue. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about it as well, because, you know, Sustain, as I said, We don't say, oh, we're going to do a social awareness campaign, or oh, we need a cause related campaign in Q4. We needed a Valentine's Day campaign, and that campaign was an orgasm equality campaign.
It
was amazing. I mean, you can still, I don't know when this is going to air, but it'll probably still be up. We created getoffgiveback.com. to create awareness around orgasm inequality and the orgasm gap, and also raise money for sex positive sex education. And those are initiatives that we're doing all the time. That's our part of our DNA. So we don't say, oh, we have to do sort of like a social justice or cause related campaign. I think with brands like Nike and Gillette, you know, I think very different campaigns. And I think there's nothing wrong with taking a stand. I think the Nike campaign was really powerful and I actually really applauded it. I think Nike's also always taken a stand on certain issues. Just in terms of like, just do it is like a very call to action type of brand.
Right.
I think with Gillette, it felt a little confusing. They'd never spoken out really on anything. And all of a sudden here they are talking about the Me Too movement. But I it's tough. I mean, I'm a very like high level net positive, like is what's going on of brands starting to take a stand and speaking up going to move us one step in the right direction? And I think yes. And are there going to be missteps along the way? Of course. And are too many brands going to cling on to this because they think it's going to generate more sales? Of course they will. But I think the general movement and the responsibility of brands to create a better future and have a positive social impact, some of that does come from just taking a stand. And so I'm sure there will be so many missteps, and there already have been. But overall, I mean, it's kind of cool, right? Because it's a validation of what we have been doing at Sustain, what my dad did for 30 years, which is like business should be a function. Like part of business is, yes, to make money, but bigger than that, it's to have a positive impact on the world and for future generations.
And that's the big takeaway for me in what you said, and reflecting back, is that there's a difference between doing it in the hopes that you're going to sell more products, and a difference between that and doing it because it's the right thing. And in the case of Nike, of course, they did it because they thought it was the right thing to do. So to me, the place from which you come is everything. And the ones that are doing it just to sell more products, hopefully they will fail because of transparency and fall flat on their faces. And that's okay. I can say that. It's my show. So I'd like to go into the conversation about the perception of sex and periods, because we're going to get into your activism, which matters and shows the authenticity you bring to the conversation. But do you believe the conversation has shifted over the years, or has it? Is there still that stigma around sex? I mean, since I was a very young mom, you know, parents were not letting their kids see sex scenes, and then they would watch the most vile, shoot them, kill them. It's like, what? Violence is much worse. This is just, you know, it goes back a really long time where sex is taboo and shooting people up is just, it's really okay. So tell me about your thoughts on that whole conversation. Is it getting easier to talk about women having their periods and putting things in your vagina? Is it getting better?
Definitely. Yes. 100% yes. We launched Sustain about 4.5 years ago, and that sounds like probably not a lot of time, but it's been pretty incredible how much the conversation has evolved and been sort of busted wide open since we started this. So in 2014, when we launched with condoms, it was tough. I mean, I make the analogy all the time that I felt like I was dealing drugs, and it really is true. It's funny, but it felt like I was made to feel constantly like I was doing something wrong and bad. And like I was I was like a vice product, not a health product.
It just cracks me up. It's like, it's such nonsense.
Well, especially, right. It's not like, anyway, I could go on a rant on that, but I felt like I was doing something wrong, not personally, but that's how people treated me.
Right, right.
And that was every level of every interaction in the business world. So, and even socially, just in telling people what I did. And then, you know, we went through this initial, okay, we have to sort of like launch the product, get distribution, get the business off the ground, which we did. And along that first 2 years, continuously, personally being attacked on the internet, and just even, you know, with potential investors and even just in meetings, like it was challenging. It was a really hard first few years, just to get the business off the ground and also just stay positive about, like, I know I'm doing the right thing. So screw everybody else. I'm just going to keep going.
Right.
But, and then it was funny because there were a lot of shifts that I noticed and that happened after the 2016 election. But one was honestly just even more anecdotally with peers and friends and my community. There was like this initial, like, even with some of my close friends, I felt like they were like, yeah, that's so great what you're doing, but like, I don't really want to talk about it.
Right. What are you really doing?
Like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of freaky. Like, you're a little, you're out there. And then the election happened and all of a sudden people are like, you are so brave. This is so great. Tell me more. I want to confide in you about my sex life. Like, it was this crazy change and it was so instantaneous after the election. You know, you have the leader of the country basically condoning sexual harassment, and all of a sudden women are like, holy shit, like, this is not okay.
Right.
And I need to stand up for myself. So that moment of the election for me and for the business was a complete inflection point. And in my perspective, a silver lining in the election happening, because now all of a sudden, all of this stuff, all of these conversations that were pushed under the rug, that no one wanted to talk about, that people are uncomfortable with, we're on the table. And we're talking about it, you know, in the news cycle and on social media, and everybody's standing up for their own rights and what, because they know what's at stake.
Yeah, their life. I mean, that's what I want to say. Their life. It's a wonderful thing for you to share with us, that I believe that a lot of good things are coming out of what's happening in this country. We're finding out what's under a lot of those rocks, and what doesn't kill us makes us stronger, and it's not going to kill me. I'm telling you right now, it's like I'm more inspired than ever to educate people about the dangers that what lies beneath, and not even so much so. 12 years to change is what we've got. So just for a minute, what do you say about your detractors? And just a little background, one of the top scientists in the world, Catherine Hayhoe, when I asked her on air, what do you say to climate deniers? She said, I don't say anything ever. I won't be on any national TV shows. I won't debate them because it's not worth it. They are less than 3% of the population, so I don't waste my time on there's no point to them. But there are people, like you said, that come out of the woodwork and say there's no medical data to support the use of organic tampons or pads. Do you respond, or you just keep doing what you're doing and showing up as the right thing?
I mean, again, you know, that's why, for me, it's about consumers have the right to know. Because how can you argue with that? If somebody wants and gets the information around traditional tampons and pads versus organic cotton and decides they want to use traditional, that's their choice.
Right.
That's not up to me. That's not up to you. That's up to them to make a decision for their own body. But there is not one long-term study looking at the impacts on women's health of the ingredients found in traditional tampon and pad brands. Not one. Without that research and without the sort of policy of the FDA saying that you have to disclose your ingredients if you're a tampon company, I just don't know how you can argue that everything's fine and that we should just be accepting the status quo. Because I'm not here to say you should use Sustain over another brand. I just think that you have the right to know what's going in your body. And I know that Sustain discloses 100% of our ingredients. So, I mean, that's how I, you know, there's always going to be naysayers. And there's always going to be people challenging on both sides. But I just don't think you can argue with the right to know.
I agree with you. And then make an informed decision. That's all. I mean, to me, it's as simple as that. It's like, you don't have to buy this product, but educate yourself and then decide. So I believe and know that you're a thought leader, you're an agent for change, you're what we call a disruptor for good. Do you ever think about helping to reframe the conversation around being green is more expensive? We do a lot in the public speaking and newsletter and changing people's thoughts about that because in some cases it is true. Side by side, sometimes organic vegetables are more expensive. So I say to people, buy 3 less meat products and then buy all the organic vegetables you want and see how your bills compare, the price of groceries. So to me, I invite people to kind of reframe their budget. And if you think organic vegetables are too expensive or this personal care product or this condom is more expensive, which you said you're price competitive, how do we help people say, I have a budget, I get 5 super grande lattes a week, I could, take a couple of those out and invest in my health and the health of my children and my family? Do you think we need to be helping people reframe the conversation about the importance of making that shift?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. And I think it's a challenging one because I think in some cases, now natural products are priced at par with traditional brands, which is great. And that's happened over time because of the demand for natural products has increased. And in some cases, so like, as I said, our condoms and lubricants are really priced at par with mainstream brands. But with organic cotton tampons and pads, you're going to see an increased price. It's not the same. And that's because the actual ingredient, 100% organic cotton, is more expensive than regular cotton. And until the demand for organic cotton is so high that the supply sort of overtakes regular or is on par with regular cotton, non-organic cotton, it will be challenging to price the products at par with mainstream brands. So I think it's hard. I mean, again, I think it's your health. It's your body. You only have one. And you need to sort of decide how to prioritize. I think for me, what I always find really interesting is the people who do buy organic food and buy organic skincare and then still buy regular tampons.
Right. There is like a disconnect. Yes.
That to me is always interesting. And we've learned a lot about our customers. And we had a lot of customers when we were launching our tampons and pads who were buying organic lube from us and fair trade condoms, but we're still using the big brands of tampons. And it's just because they didn't know.
Right.
And because it's more expensive and you need to educate someone about why it's worth paying more. And not everyone's going to agree with that and not everyone's going to do it, but it's up to us to educate people on why it is worth it to spend a little bit more money.
And the thing is, it happened, the transformation happened for me, and I'm able to share at a very personal level going into the store and seeing how much these organic products cost more than this. And then the more you educate yourselves and the deeper dive you're willing to take, the outcome is your health. That's it, the bottom line. And look at our healthcare costs as a country. It's staggering and really at some level disgusting because we're doing a lot of it to ourselves. And I remember stocking up on organic fruits and vegetables and not buying because we literally don't buy red meat anymore in this family. That's the biggest budget item in our grocery cart. So when you stop doing that, but it took a journey. It was a process of really reframing what's expensive and what's not. So it's like we can't give up on that. And I think when you talk about your own tribe where they were using some of your products but not making the leap to the other important piece of that and how it just takes time. So let's talk a little bit about your book because it blows me away still at my very young age of 68 right now, how there is still there's still stigma, hush, hush, don't talk about it when it comes to sex. And who's even says vagina? I mean, you know, it's funny if you say vajayjay, but don't really say vagina because, oh my God. So your book, Get on Top of Your Pleasure, Sexuality, and Wellness. And I loved that you said get on top. It made me laugh. Got it. A Vagina Revolution, which is described as a millennial's guide to sexual health. And my first reaction was, all women can benefit from this book. It's not just millennials because, I mean, I listened to Brené Brown's talks on shame and all of those things and being your vulnerable. And still a lot in her research is about women and men not talking about their sexual needs or being shamed by it and all of those things. So why is it so still hush-hush? And again, do you have hope? Is it changing? And doesn't every woman need a book like this? So that's like five questions. You can pick which one you want to answer, but it's like, yeah, everybody should read this book.
Thank you. the book was really came out of years of talking to thousands of women in person and then obviously tens and tens of thousands of women through our customer service team. And the thing about the book that was the reason I wrote the book was because all of these conversations, obviously there's people who come up to me every day and ask or tell me things that I'm like, whoa, I have no idea how to answer that. That's crazy. Like, you are amazing for telling me that, but I honestly can't help you. Like, I'm not a doctor.
And please don't ever ask me that again.
No, you can ask me. I'm really like an open, I'm like probably a little too open to be like a business leader type person. But anyways, I'm very open book. So people ask me all this stuff. And then we get all these questions on customer service. And some of, as I'm saying, are sort of out there and we're like, that's amazing. Or we have no idea how to answer that. But a lot of the questions that I've seen over the years were this kind of basic sexual and reproductive health information. So things like, how does hormonal birth control work? Why do I get this fake period? Like, how do I know if I've had an orgasm? And is masturbating cheating on my boyfriend? You know, there's, I don't know if those are all quote unquote basic, but there's straightforward, some of them, questions that can be answered with sex positive, accurate information. And Sustain's mission is to empower women to take control of their sexual health. And part of that is through education and through being a resource for all of these types of questions. And so what better way to do that than to write a book and really write a guide for all of our customers and for all women, and men can read it too.
Right.
If they're curious. What better way to do that than create a resource for both our customers and also for our team? I mean, I think I really wanted us to establish sort of a baseline of content that we could pull from, which we do as we grow.
And was it well received? I mean, it was, when I read about it and read some of the reviews, I mean, talk about a welcome, refreshing conversation that women really want and need to have. In your mind, was it, does it continue to be well received? It's been out less than a year.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I mean, I think the book has been received really well, and also I think for me and for the business, it's really helped sort of establish us as thought leaders in the space. And that's something that's really important to me, because I want to leave the world in a place where female sexuality is celebrated, not stigmatized. And a lot of that can be done through changing condom culture. And I think every single man or woman who buys our condoms over others, there's a really good feeling that comes with that for many different reasons. And it's probably not the same for everybody. And so that's part of it. But I think the bigger piece, or how we do the bigger piece of the puzzle of all of this, is just through education as well. And so the book has been really an incredible milestone for me and for the and Sustain, but also just a way to establish us as leaders in the space.
And indeed, I'm sure it does. It's what an accomplishment. It's like, yeah, write a book about something like this. It's high praise from me. So this is a one of those shows where I really want to ask, as we note that time has flown, we're almost up on an hour, but what's your call to action? We found out the other day that we did another, you know, deep dive into our market, that people listen to 80% of our podcast. They complete 80% of it, which is really surprising, because a lot of podcasts, people listen to 15% or whatever. So our latest statistics are very encouraging to us. A lot of people listen to them, you know, to the very end. But for people that listen to this, what's the one takeaway you hope they'll leave with, or change that, a change they'll make in their lives after hearing what you've had to share? What would you say, okay, people, women of the world, if you're not going to do anything else, just do X. Do you have one or two takeaways?
Yeah, I have two. My first takeaway is to start thinking with your vagina, which means that...
I love it. I want to see how that comes out from our social media people on Twitter. I love it.
True. I mean, there's this line. We had this video that went viral like a year ago, and the opening line was like, treat your vagina better than your face. I really stand behind that. So that's one. And two is this idea of demanding equal pleasure. I think we've been really focused, and not that we've made all the progress we need to make, at demanding equality at work, sharing responsibilities between men and women in raising children and at home. And I think the bedroom is a place that gets overlooked when it comes to equality, gender equality. So demand equal pleasure and think with your vagina are my two things to leave you with.
I just want to kind of end there, but I have to do a little closeout. And I think you'll like our closeout. Before I do that, our next Down to Earth show, which is our local show on February 27th, we're going to kick off our TEP Brighty Awards series with Patrick Graham of the Nature Conservancy in Arizona. And what I think everybody will like about that show is the Nature Conservancy used to buy land and preserve it, and now they are being so active on the arena of fire, wildlife management and water management and wetlands management, so much more in the space of climate change. And our March 5th show with Jaden Lim, Beyond the Headdress, will certainly shake you to your core in terms of a 16-year-old dynamo speaking in front of 6,000 and 10,000 people audiences about the stereotypes around Native people. She's just, you'll want to listen to this show. So my last word: how does this conversation fit into our overall commitment to raising the consciousness of consumers in every way we can think of about the 12 years to change mantra in light of the increasing impact of climate change? To me, everything. I personally believe what Mika has to say. I believe that sustained products are better, healthier, and safer for women and girls. And what I know is that they are safer for the planet. Toxic chemicals are killing us. They're destroying our oceans, our rivers, our streams, polluting our air, and impacting our health dramatically. We need all hands on deck when it comes to protecting our children, each other, and our planet. My call to action is simply this: educate yourself about what you are putting on and in your body, and about the impact of your consumer habits on this great planet of ours. There's quite a bit at stake, and the clock is ticking. Thanks for being a part of our world. And thank you, Mika, for being a part of my world now and for all you're doing on our behalf.
Thank you so much.